Moolala is brought to you by the nonprofit credit counseling agency, Credit Canada. Money and relationships. We could have this conversation over and over and over and over again with new perspectives, new challenges. The nuance is so specific to each couple, but I think it is so important that we continue to look at how that dynamic works, how to make that dynamic more effective, because it really matters both to the quality of your finances and to the quality of your life. So today we're going to focus on a book called Tight Wads and Spendthrifts, Navigating the Money Minefield in Real Relationships. Its author is Scott Rick. He joins us now from Ann Arbor, Michigan. Hello there.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
It is our pleasure. You're a behavioral scientist. You work at University of Michigan's Ross School of Business. Why this particular focus? Aren't there less controversial and easier things that you could have studied?
Well, those aren't very exciting to me. Yeah. So it's there's a lot of me search here. I've been fascinated with my own, freewheeling spending over the years. I'm a bit of a spendthrift, and I married a tightwad, and I got fascinated by this dynamic. I wondered, do other couples have this? How do they navigate it? So it's all very much inspired by kind of what's going on at home.
I am deeply ambivalent about your title, because on the one hand, I think it is super judgmental and horrible. I did the quiz and I was completely fun offended. But on the other hand, it does illustrate with shorthand the continuum, let's say, on how people approach money and where the tension can really fester. Tell us more about why you decided to focus in this way.
First of all, the names Tightwads and Spendthrifts, it's very affectionate. They're loving. We could have called them other things that I think would have been less interesting, but we landed on those titles. We think this is an interesting dimension to think about, because people who spend a lot of money, they get a lot of attention, a lot of blame, a lot of, well, if you could just stop buying your lattes, you could afford a giant house.
Yes.
But there are kind of this fascinating group of people who look good on paper financially. You wouldn't think they would be real anxious about spending money, but a lot of them have just kind of overlearned this response to spending, this anxious, distressed response to kind of protect themselves from spending wildly. And, you know, sometimes it helps and sometimes it hurts. They don't buy things that they should buy, that they know they should buy. And they suffer, and the people around them can suffer too.
Your first two chapters really work to illuminate those two, let's call them types of people, inside the mind and brain of a tightwad, and then when we're not wired to save. What are some things that you're looking at that go beyond the stereotypes?
So I think one thing that's surprising about tightwads is that they don't love to save. It's not that they've accumulated a lot of savings because they just enjoy saving. There are those people, we call them frugal people. They enjoy saving. They're happy. They're not overburdened by a lot of desire. But tightwads, they do have desire. They want to have nice vacations. They want to make their spouse happy with a good gift, but they just can't bring themselves to spend the money. They're too anxious about it. Spendthrifts are fascinating. They're not necessarily trying to like show off and make sure everyone sees that, oh, I buy fancy things. Someone cut the brakes on the car. They just can't stop themselves. So they shop for things they need and they shop for things they might need one day. Like, oh, maybe I'll pick up a nice velvet jacket while I'm shopping for work clothes, because that could be fun at a holiday party. I might not be invited to that party, but boy, I'd love to have it just in case that happens.
So if we say that the first step is understanding how you are about money and how your spouse is about money, how do you start to bridge the gap or integrate those two things into an amazing dish, an amazing stew or salad dressing or whatever metaphor you use that combines the best of two quite different things?
Well, I think there are things that are good to discuss and things that are less good to discuss. And so I like, particularly when spouses have different approaches, a combination of joint and separate accounts. A joint account to make sure all the incoming money is our money. You psychologically launder the money. There's no yours and mine. It's all ours. And we can talk about kind of big picture purchases or you know expenditures. But then we each get to spend some of our money without closely being monitored by the other person. So that's where the separate accounts come in. We can each move some of our money into a separate account. And I just know kind of in general what you're up to. But if I saw the details, I might get kind of caught up in what you're doing. And
that is an understatement, caught up.
Yes, yes. So that's why, you know, people talk about financial transparency. I say, try financial translucency. Try like just a vague high level understanding of what the other person is up to. I think that can get around a lot of unnecessary kind of bickering.
A neighbor had a package delivered to our house by accident. And when I took it over to deliver it, the husband declared, "We didn't order anything." And then the wife came sheepishly to the store and said, yeah, actually, we did." They sold the house soon after, and I'm not convinced they're still together. What are some ways that, so in addition to translucency, and I think that's a great conversation, how do you have the next conversation that illuminates how we're going to behave on some of the bigger things that that a separate account wouldn't factor in, like a big house versus a little house, a $100,000 wedding versus a $5,000 wedding?
Exactly. So on those kind of clearly shared decisions, one kind of rule of thumb that I suggest is that when you're thinking about a new material item, kind of upgrading our car or, you know, just a physical, tangible thing. In those cases, I say, generally, let the tightwad win. Just we know from the research that a lot of kind of material purchases don't make us super happy in the long run. We get tired of them. It kind of, you know, there's an instant burst of happiness and it goes away. However, when it comes to kind of shared experiences, particularly things like a family vacation or a romantic adventure, in those cases, I say, maybe let the spendthrift win, because we know, again, from the research that the memories, the anticipation, the learning about each other that happens on a shared adventure, that's so important. And so there I say, err on the side of, you know, loosening up.
Very, very interesting. You have a chapter called The Secret Language of Gifts. Full disclosure, I am not a good gift giver. I don't live in the world of, I don't pay attention to what would make people happy. I don't like being in stores. I have very few weaknesses, but that is one of them. I'm not good at it. What do you mean by The Secret Language of Gifts?
I used to be not good also, but I got better. I realized that I really need to kind of, you know, particularly in a marriage, I really need to understand kind of my wife's inner psychological world, what she's excited about, what she's planning on, what she's worried about. Kind of, I need to kind of deeply understand her in order to give her a gift that shows, hey, I see you, I understand you, I appreciate you. Because we often walk around with these private, nice thoughts about our spouse, but we don't articulate them. So, the gift-giving occasions are these critical moments for us to display what we know and appreciate about our partner. And so that's why I say, like, don't ask them, hey, what do you want for Valentine's Day or the anniversary? Like, you know, it's a, I guess it's a way to avoid disaster, but it's not a way to kind of show what you know about your partner. Mm-hmm. So you have to invest some time in it.
You're giving a very personal example in which you altered, modified, changed your behavior in order to account for your spouse. How much of being better at this is the self-awareness of how I am versus the changes that I need to make in order to have this work for both of us?
Well, it's 50-50. I mean, it's both. You need kind of a deep understanding of yourself and your own kind of imperfections and bad patterns, and you can adjust that. And, you know, really the first three chapters are about, you know, just an individual could read those and kind of tune things up. But yeah, how your actions are kind of perceived by your partner and kind of their experience and how they might, how that informs what they view. So it's really this kind of shared learning activity.
As someone who I think people would still describe me as a tightwad, but they didn't meet me when I was in my 20s. Mm-hmm. I had a friend, we went out for dinner and he actually called me to task for my attempts to split the bill 50 or not split it 50-50 because I didn't have beer and I didn't have a dessert. And yes. He's like, dude, not the way this works.
No.
So I think just as we wrap things up here, how does one overcome what for many of us, and I put me in this category, is a righteousness about our predisposition for being either a tightwad or a spendthrift? There's a real like justification that my way is right.
Yes. Well, yeah. I mean, they're right in different ways. Like, what are we trying to maximize here? Long-term happiness or kind of immediate pleasure? There's no right answer here. I will say for the tightwads, it's important to, you can actually use budgeting to loosen up, which is kind of counterintuitive, but yep. A tightwad will never be able to find the money in the moment. But if they can pre-commit, if they can set aside money to indulge later, and then they stumble upon an opportunity, then they can actually loosen up. For a spendthrift, you have to understand retailers, businesses, they're not looking to help you. So it's incumbent upon you to kind of make spending more painful, to kind of put some speed bumps up, to delete your credit card information off of Amazon and other sites, to pay with cash when you can. Just insert these little moments to kind of reconsider purchases because, you know, everyone's looking to make it easier to buy. You have to make it harder to buy.
Years ago, I did a budgeting exercise and found that I spent under 3% of my annual spending on clothing. And I look like I'd been dressed by a Goodwill store.
Yep.
So I changed and now I'm a fashion plate. Scott, thank you so much for your time and for your insight and taking some of the steam out of what can be a real fraught discussion in relationships.
Well, this is fun. Thank you so much.
Scott Rick is the author of Tightwads and Spendthrifts, Navigating the Money Minefield in Real Relationships. All right. Yes, I'm a tightwad, but I'm like a reformed tightwad and I'm better. And my husband would agree that I'm better than I was decades ago. Great fodder for couples and for individuals too, in terms of how we think about our relationship to spending.